99.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll talk about the restoration of a historic downtown building, and Jessica Rosegard discusses a series of prison reform bills with the Advocate's Stephanie Grace. Then, New Orleans funk master John Cleary talks about new projects, his love for the city, and more. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. One historic building in downtown New Orleans has reopened its doors after being abandoned for nearly 15 years. Joining me now is Green Coast principal and co-founder, Will Bradshaw. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Janae.
So tell us about the Pythian Building, but first, let's start talking about the history of the Pythian Building.
Sure. It's an incredible building, one piece of the history, and there's so many layers to this history, but one piece of it has to do with the jazz club that was originally on the roof. And so the jazz club that is up there has been called a number of things, the Pythian Roof Garden. For a while, it was named after A.J. Pirone, so it was called Pirone's Garden of Joy, a whole number of different things. But it was one of the really important places for jazz in the city of New Orleans and really the development of the unique New Orleans sound. The original Tuxedo Brass Band may have even begun in there, but certainly played regularly in there. It was the first place that Louis Armstrong ever performed publicly. And to try to recognize that history and really make that part of the story of reopening the building, we actually have named every unique design of a unit in the building after one of these musical pioneers from New Orleans. So we have, you know, their legacy continued in the names of our units.
That's awesome.
It's pretty fun.
Let's talk about the founder of the Pythian Building back in 1908.
So Smith W. Green was born a slave, was a self-made millionaire, had a number of businesses. One of the most prominent was an insurance company that was actually housed in the building. Homer Plessy was one of his employees. Mr. Green was the chairman and one of the kind of principal movers and shakers of an organization called the Colored Knights of Pythias. And that organization, under his leadership and with support from his brother and a number of other people, commissioned the building in 1908. It was completed in 1909. Times-Picayune said when it was built, it was the largest undertaking ever by an African-American in U.S. history. Really just an extraordinary structure that during the Jim Crow era, it provided office space for African-American professionals. The NAACP for the state of Louisiana was founded in there. Louisiana Weekly started in there. For a generation and a half, many African-American professionals who needed office space downtown were in there. There was a university in the building. I already mentioned the jazz club. It was really the center of African-American cultural and economic life in New Orleans. Just an incredible history and legacy for African-American life in the city. And for us, one of the things that you know, we never intended, but creates a really interesting juxtaposition, is to have this building open in the same week that the Jefferson Davis Monument was removed. And we think of the building really as a monument to what is possible from human ingenuity and innovation, perseverance, that it's a story of really our best selves. And we have been intrigued to have that juxtaposition with so much enmity and so much fighting around the removal of the monuments, to have this building that really just tells this remarkable story, not only of a remarkable individual, but a remarkable group of people who pushed civil rights forward at a time where, you know, the country would treated African-Americans as second-class citizens. And so to have this building come out of that and to have the opportunity to restore it and recover it is just an extraordinary privilege. And we feel really amazingly lucky and humbled to have the chance to tell part of that story.
Now, the Pythian Building just celebrated its grand opening a couple weeks ago, but it's now a multi-use building. Let's talk about those features.
So we've got on the ground floor the Pythian Market, which will be opening in the fall. And that will be 19 different vendors, mostly food retail related. They will have sort of small spaces in this food hall arrangement. So that's one piece, and that'll be on the ground floor. We'll also have doctor's offices through Access Health Louisiana, and operates as a clinic of choice. They'll also serve anybody who comes in off the street.
Okay.
Magnolia Physical Therapy will have a space in the building, so we'll have a physical therapy clinic. Green Coast Enterprises, our offices, will move in there.
So it seems like you guys are bringing community to the Pythian Building.
That's really one of the central missions of what we're doing. And Crescent City Community Land Trust is involved in the project principally to create opportunities for permanently affordable housing and permanently affordable economic development opportunities.
And, you know, while we're talking about mm-hmm. affordable housing, how many apartment units are in the building?
We have 69 apartment units. Six of those are penthouses, and 25 of them are income-adjusted units. And those 25 units are mostly full, and we've hardly just started leasing. And that, for us, is another way that this really connects back to community.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we very self-consciously were trying to do with the Pythian is to say, you know, this is a place for all of us. Right, we're going to renovate this downtown building in a way that allows for New Orleanians of all types to come together and live in the same space and make this building a really remarkable, kind of great place to be again.
Pretty much blending downtown New Orleans.
That's, I think, very much what we're trying to do.
So the Pythian building is located at 234 Loyola Avenue. That's downtown New Orleans, but definitely a central location.
Oh, it's a super location. I mean, you're across the street from the public library. It's a 5-minute walk to the Superdome.
You can pretty much bike anywhere.
You can bike anywhere, and really to support that sort of biking culture. You know, we have the first bike wash in the city.
A bike wash.
Exactly what it sounds like. You can roll your bike into this room. You can hose it down, clean it off. It's like one of the, you know, the spray your car down car washes.
Okay.
And really trying to think about how do you allow people to live downtown, lose their car payment, not have to pay for parking.
That is something that's been a burden on a lot of people that live downtown, is the fact that aside from rent, you also have to pay to park your vehicle in a garage. Mm-hmm. Do you guys even have a garage at the Pythian building?
We do have a garage that will be connected to the building. And we've leased spaces in that garage. It's not ours, but
okay.
A neighboring garage, and we'll have a connection direct into the building, so you'll feel like you're parking in the building, so you can have your car. We wanted to provide options for people who, in order to make downtown living more affordable, were in a position to let go of their car and find other ways to move around.
That's great. Will Bradshaw, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Janai. It's a pleasure.
To find out more about the Pythian building in downtown New Orleans, visit thepythian-nola.com. Governor Edwards backed a series of prison reform bills in this legislative session. The goal is to reduce the prison population, save money, and reduce recidivism. The plan is a sweeping overhaul of Louisiana's criminal justice system. In a press conference on Tuesday, the governor, state lawmakers, and district attorneys announced that they had reached a compromise on the bill. WWNO's Jessica Rosegard sat down with Stephanie Grace from The Advocate to discuss the prison reform legislation and another bill dealing with the protection of military monuments.
Regarding the governor's prison reform plan, Representative Leger said, quote, many of us would have liked to have gotten the entire package done, but in order to pass meaningful legislation, you have to have votes. So what was wrong with the original plan?
Legislating 101, isn't that?
Yeah.
The biggest problem was there was some opposition among district attorneys who are very powerful in the state. This was kind of a comprehensive plan aimed at reducing the prison population. Louisiana, of course, has the highest prison population
mm-hmm.
in the country. And as the governor always points out, that doesn't mean we have more criminals. It means we have tougher laws.
Right.
And that hasn't served us well. And there's an interesting coalition that's come together behind this issue in this state and in other states of, you know, progressives who are looking at it maybe from a human rights and fairness point of view, and of conservatives who are looking at it from a financial point of view,
mm-hmm.
how much the state is spending to incarcerate all these people. So the governor, with the backing of a task force that had been meeting for about a year, put together a really broad plan to attack sentencing on nonviolent offenses,
mm-hmm.
reduce sentencing, maybe combine some charges in some ways, reduce mandatory minimum sentences.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hodgepodge of efforts all aimed at getting some of those nonviolent offenders out more quickly. But there was a piece of it aimed at lifers, basically people who are serving very long sentences without parole for violent crimes in
mm-hmm.
many cases. And part of the problem is these people are in prison for a very long time. It's expensive. There's
yeah.
no prospect of rehabilitation. And once they get to be older, they're probably not a risk to society. And they have very high health costs. So when they're looking at saving money and also maybe being a little more humanitarian,
mm-hmm.
they were looking at not allowing parole for some of those people. And that's really where the political problems were focused, because the district attorneys, some victims' rights advocates said, we're not going there. the compromise with the district attorneys. They now support the whole package, they said, and that's really important politically. For the most part, parole for lifers is off the table. There's an exception that they talked about at a press conference with the governor Tuesday, and that is people who are sentenced under previous laws, people who've been in at least 40 years and were sentenced when they had the possibility of parole. So that very small group, about 140 people, will still be eligible for parole. But that's kind of the key to the compromise, I think.
And everybody at the press conference that the governor held seemed very satisfied with the package, still thinks that the plan will really improve the incarceration rate in Louisiana.
Right. And save some money. And they're talking about, I think, $262 million over 10 years. That's a little bit less than they had hoped. Mm-hmm. They're talking about reducing the prison population 10%. The original target was 13%. So it's not quite as ambitious as it was, but it's still pretty ambitious by Louisiana standards.
This money that is saved also, there's a plan to take a portion of the money saved and sort of reinvest it in criminal reforms, right?
The task force actually had the word reinvestment right in the title. And that's important because the idea, I think, is not to take most of the money and put it towards other uses. The idea is to take it and try to improve the things that really will help people reenter society once they get out of prison.
And stay out of prison.
So really attack the cyclical nature of, you know, people going into prison and then coming out and going right back in. So job training and drug rehab and things like that.
Another issue that came up this week that has been in the news here in New Orleans and is definitely getting hotter rather than cooler is the issue of Confederate monuments. Legislation in the House would make it more difficult to remove certain statues, would forbid the removal, the renaming, or alteration of any military monument on public property. The debate was really emotional this week on the House floor.
It was very emotional. It passed. The House approved this bill by quite a large margin. But the debate was kind of lopsided the other way. The sponsor spoke about it, but really nobody else stood up to speak on its behalf. But a number of members of the Black Caucus stood up and spoke in really emotional, personal terms in a way that they really haven't up until now. A lot of people have said, you know, this is just Mitch Landrieu and his ego. Well, this is clearly not, you know, people took it very personally. And Gary Carter, a state representative from New Orleans, said, you know, you're talking about monuments to people who want to enslave me. Mm-hmm. Very tough words. And when their colleagues voted in favor of it, the Black Caucus walked out.
Yeah.
And people were really upset. The next day, the governor had a press conference actually about juvenile justice, but he was asked his opinion on this bill. And he's someone who's really, he's a Democrat, but he's really kind of stayed out of it and talked about it as a local issue. He didn't say whether he would veto it, but he said he had some problems with the bill itself. He thought it undermined local authority. It was cumbersome. But he also said he watched what happened in the House where he used to serve and where these members of the Black Caucus are really some of his closest allies, and was just really saddened by the divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I know this is a hard issue for people and it's our history, but is it the best part of our history? That's the way he put it. And he just kind of left the question there. And, you know, I think you kind of get a sense of where he's leaning personally. Now, it might not get to his desk, I should say, because it passed the House, which is more conservative than the Senate. But if it does get to the governor's desk, I think we got a hint of where he's leaning.
Stephanie Grace, columnist for The Advocate. Thank you for joining me.
The city has adopted so many people, including artists from around the world. New Orleans Funkmaster John Cleary is one of them. He's headlining Bayou Boogaloo this weekend, and he's joining me now.
Well, I know. Well, baby,
John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
First off, you know, you've been living in New Orleans for a while. Let's start by talking about when you first fell in love with the city.
Well, I think I fell in love with the idea of the city long before I even got here. When I did come to New Orleans, it was a bit of a giant leap of faith because I didn't really have a plan and I didn't really have any money. And I didn't really have a clue what I was going to do. I just knew I wanted to come to New Orleans and learn where that piano style came from.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my basic MO. And I arrived, and thank goodness I really landed on my feet, and people were very kind to me. And it could have all gone horribly wrong. I could have been back in England within days. I think I turned up with $100 in my naivety as a teenager. But I got a job, I got a place to live, and I ended up getting a gig. And what was planned as a two-week trip to New Orleans changed a little bit, and I'm still here, yeah. 36, 37 years later.
So what happened within those 2 weeks that stole your heart?
Oh, I think it was within the first 10 minutes. You know, I mean, I kind of knew a lot about New Orleans. I mean, my uncle had lived in New Orleans, and I used to hear stories about the city. I grew up hearing New Orleans music at home. My mum loved New Orleans jazz. But I also think sometimes as musicians, you know, sometimes you're hardwired to process musical information in a certain way. And however it came about that I was hardwired, and the way I'm wired, it's New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So by luck, I happened to just move to the place that I was already kind of programmed for, really, without even realizing.
Right. And it's so great to hear New Orleans in your music, like everything I hear from you.
I couldn't take it out. It's funny because, you know, in When I speak, you know, people say, hey, how come you still got an English accent? Well, I mean, you don't lose some stuff. You know, I've been
right.
Here. I've been here a long time. But when I play music, I play with a New Orleans accent.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sort of default. When I just sit down and play naturally, it's always got this. You know, it always has those little filigree kind of details.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, New Orleans kind of looks like it sounds and tastes like it sounds. You can't separate those things. I mean, when you look at the old houses in New Orleans, you see that all the lovely detail on a wrought iron balcony or a corbel on a wooden house, all the details that they used to put on. That's kind of like the extra lagniappe
that
you get when you play music. When you play New Orleans music, you have these little colors that... I dig that.
Yeah, that's your music. Now, let's talk about the addition to that, which is the Absolute Monster Gentleman.
Yeah, the Monster Gentleman is a band I put together a long time ago, at a time when I was writing songs and didn't have a way of actually performing them, because up to that point, I would hire rhythm section players who were the best in the city. Cats that are no longer with us, like Smokey Johnson and Irving Charles from Fats Domino's band. And that was great, but I was forever doing covers, the old Little Willie John tunes or New Orleans Professor Longhair tunes, well, Huey Smith tunes, whatever it was. So the Monster Gents was a band I put together so that I could have a group that would be happy to get together and rehearse and learn some new songs and take pride in addressing all the little details. And the great thing about the band is that everybody sings.
Yeah.
So we have these nice four-part harmonies on a bunch of the songs. And that's something that not a lot of bands in New Orleans were doing. Everyone wanted just to show up and get paid.
Yeah.
And just throw it together, kind of chaotic, a bit like New Orleans itself, really.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of gigs, I know that the next year is jam-packed for you, but this weekend you'll be performing along Bayou St. John for the Bayou Boogaloo. Excited about that, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, I love playing in New Orleans. We get to play all around the world, but mm-hmm. There's a certain thing that just feels comfortable when you're playing in New Orleans, because you have your home fans and people that are familiar with the repertoire. And,
right, right.
And the Bayou Boogaloo, this might be the first time I've actually played it.
Yeah, I know for sure that it is.
Yeah, so, all right, good. So playing up on the Bayou, yeah, man,
yeah.
How can you beat that, right? Playing New Orleans funk with the Absolute Monster Gentleman right there on the Bayou in New Orleans. Doesn't get any better than that.
So what can Bayou Boogalooers, if that's a thing, what can Bayou Boogalooers expect from you and a Monster Gentleman? Because I do know that you have some new music out.
Well, we're starting to work on material for a new record. We started a crowdfunding site at johncleary.com to get funds together to go and make a new album. But we have a pretty big repertoire from the four or so albums that we've made over the years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It'll be a combination of
Help
all those things.
Help Me Somebody.
You like that one?
Yes, indeed.
Anybody wants to play that one for you?
Yeah.
That song was almost lost.
Really?
I wrote it without a pen and a piece of paper. I was walking down the street in Macau in the South China Sea. And the song came to me, And I tried to keep it going in my head until I got back to the room I was staying in. And then I scrabbled and found a pen and a piece of paper and wrote it down and forgot about it. And then about 3 years later,
wow,
I was cleaning up and found an old suitcase. This was doing some cleaning right before a rehearsal, and a piece of paper fell out. And it was this song. I thought, man, I remember that. How does that go? And as I was starting to playing, just trying to remember it, Cornell, the bass player in the band, walked in the door and said, what's that? And then he started joining in, and Big D showed up. And the next minute, we were all playing this song, and it came back to me. And then we did it that night in the gig, and we've been doing it ever since.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, folks should know that aside from the Absolute Monster Gentleman, you're also working on a live solo record called Live at Chickiwawa. Let's talk briefly about that.
Well, it's a bit daft, really, because I'm a New Orleans piano player. I have been for years. I'm known as a piano player, even though my first instrument really is guitar. That's why I came. That's why I played for the longest. But I've never made a piano record. And so people that come to my solo gigs always ask for a solo record. And when I first put the Monster Gents together, I stopped doing solo. Solo gigs were a good way of paying the rent. But I wanted people to hire my band, which was a bit more expensive. But
yeah. If they wanted me, I mean, because you spent so much time doing features and stuff.
Yeah, you want people, you know, I wanted people to see my band, mm-hmm. as I say. So I say, if you want me, you got to pay for the whole band. And fairly recently, I decided that it was important. People were asking me to do solo gigs around town. And a couple of venues asked me, and I said, yes, I'll do it, because I think it's important that somebody here is maintaining the tradition of not just playing, but singing. And no one's really doing it anymore. So
there's you.
Someone's got to do it. So, well, you know what? I like playing. That's the stuff I love doing. You know,
see,
I think,
the need, feel the need.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been doing the solo gigs, and people say, well, where can we buy it? And so I thought, okay, well, let me, I'm going to record a gig and make it available, and people love it. So we did a soft release this last week for Jazz Fest for all the New Orleans music lovers that mm-hmm. are in town, and we're going to make it available on all the platforms in the next couple of weeks. Anyway, there's so much good music that's already been played. Mm-hmm. The important thing is to embrace the tradition, learn as much as you can, and then do the next thing, which is to write new songs.
Now, speaking of embracing tradition, I'm going to give you this. You have to pick one. Who would you rather shadow, James Booker or Fats Domino?
Two piano players from New Orleans who were contemporaries, a little bit different generation. And I would say Fats Domino was a very rudimentary pianist. Good at what he did. Who really exuded that quality that we all love in New Orleans, which is good fun.
Yeah.
Booker was a tortured soul who represents in his music an incredible depth of emotion. And he's one of these gifted musicians who can convey emotions that move you so deeply. And he's just doing that by pressing the keys of a piano and moving columns of air, which then stimulate your eardrum. And his dexterousness was remarkable. He played these lovely big tenths on the piano. That change, particularly the five chord with a raised five and that nine on top, and then this with Booker, he kind of squeezed every ounce of pain and joy and
yeah
and sorrow and all this mixed bag of emotions. You know, there's a line in an old blues song about New Orleans called Burgundy Street Blues, and it says, it's a place of mixed emotions that will stamp a memory on your heart that will never leave.
Wow, that's my city.
That's my city too, baby.
John Cleary, thanks so much for stopping by today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Doc.
Catch John Cleary and the Absolute Monster Gentleman at Bayou Boogaloo this weekend on the Mothership Foundation stage at 7 p.m.
And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Thanks for joining us.